Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.
What typically happens in the world of freight? Right? And for many of us, we've been following through with the news as we have been doing here on Kaya Biz regarding Transnet, TPT, Transnet Port Terminals in particular, and how they have managed to improve their target of daily tonnages of goods and containers essentially that are used and moved. Now, typically the metric that is used as a measure to evaluate how much movement of container goods is targeted is TEUs, and that is to help us get a better understanding of the evaluation, but also basically how much is able to move between the ports and be processed into the economy. Again, TEUs is 20-foot equivalent unit, the volume of a standard 20-foot long shipping container. So, to help us unpack this and so much further, we are joined on the line by Juanita Marie, CEO of the Southern African Association of Freight Forwarders, giving us some feedback on the show today. Such a pleasure to have you with us, Juanita, and thank you so much for making time.
Thank you very much, and warm greetings. It's nice to listen to you. I think you can come and help us in the logistics network, specifically when you talk about TEUs. I think you're quite right. That is how we measure containers. But thank you very much.
Thank you so much. I am so excited to speak to you. It's been a while that we've been trying to get you on the show. So really grateful that through your travels, you've availed yourself to speak to us tonight. Because I'm one of those people, Ms. Marie, who gets very curious. Whenever I'm in a coastal city, I was in PE, in Durban, in Cape Town in recent weeks. And whenever I drove past the ports, I'd look at the number of ships and container ships waiting to dock. I'd wonder if they're being maintained or if they have some stock that they need to drop off. And then when I see the containers being processed in the lot at the port, I often question, what's in there? Is it gym equipment? Is it a car? Is it clothing? Is it people? And these, I guess, are just curious questions that typically come up in my mind when I evaluate the ports. But help us contextualize the importance of not only the ports, but the role and function you play as well as the South African Freight Forwarders Association. How this interlinks with the robustness of our economy.
Yeah, I think our economy is a very open economy. You know that, and you spoke about Minister Donald Trump or President Donald Trump in terms of the imports and exports. And that is what the containers are doing. It helps moving the cargo in and out of our ports. Now, why we measure it specifically the boxes, and let's call it for our conversation a box, is that there's different measurements because you know that South Africa is not close to the markets in terms of the China and Europe and Brazil, although Brazil have a transit time of about 11 days. Mm-hmm. If you go to Europe, you mainly work about 21 days. And depending in China, you can sometimes work on 30 days. So the supply chain, and as you rightly say, the complex economy, which is in the manufacturing and the pharmaceutical, move on the vessels, and they have a rotation schedule. So you move the containers and it needs to stay in that schedule. And the moment that your ports are not product or have a high productivity rate, you're actually holding the vessels back, and then you're not attractive to the world in terms of coming to your vessels and turn it around quite quickly. So that's why the port productivity and how quickly we can turn around the vessels are very important. And you're correct in analyzing that over the last, I would think, 2 months, mm-hmm. we've seen a significant increase in the port productivity. And that, maybe if I can give you some time, it's not just a vessel come into Durban and then it goes out again. It have a rotation schedule. It sometimes go to Durban, then to the Eastern Cape, and then to the Cape Town, and then it sails away. Oh. So we've got a very unique situation in South Africa, I would think, and we always call it like it's maybe our unique port rotation, because we help our ports quite a lot with that rotation. So that's why it's for us important to have the port productivity and not to distort that rotation schedule. Because we saw, you probably saw it about last year when Maersk was transshipping some of the cargo to Port Louis, and that we don't want to do.
Tell us why that's important, because I would actually think it's easy if it comes to one port and then goes back to a different market. But we've got three ports, as you've mentioned. Help us understand, you know, how does that facilitate the movement and the trade of goods? Is it picking up and dropping off, or dropping off all these products, or picking them all up? I guess I'm just trying to understand what actually happens when it stops at all these ports. How does that speak to our competitiveness?
Yes, as I explained to you, let's say the port rotation or let's say from Europe, it's 21 days. So the moment you've got then a mother vessel, the moment that your mother vessel is going to Port Louis and put on a smaller feeder vessel to South Africa, you add days in your transit schedule. So that's not good for the whole economy, because then you've got more working capital locked into your shipping. And that's normally what you don't want, because you want businesses to make sure that they're agile and they don't have a lot of capital in the working capital of stock in different places. So that's why you want to shorten the transit time as best as possible. And that's why the moment that you move the hubs or you take South Africa away and you bring them feeder vessels, that means you add transit time into the whole movement of cargo. And that's not good.
I see what you mean. In terms of, you know, this uptick then, as we see in the processing of more containers, we have highlighted that, you know, TPT has been working with private sector participants. But help us contextualize what that means and what it looks like, because it's not just moving containers through the ports. It's the maintenance. It's the processing. Because a lot of us actually don't realize when a container hits our port, it doesn't just quickly move into the country. There's SARS that's involved, correctional services. There's quite a lot in terms of screening the process, right? And the containers too.
Yeah, let me give you some statistical data. So in Durban, you've got two main ports. You've got Pier 1 and Pier 2. So if we look at Pier 2, they had about 38,000 containers on a weekly basis. Then you go to Eastern Cape, they handle about 20,000 containers in and out. Then you look at Pier 1, back to Durban, it's about 16,000 to 17,000. Then Cape Town, they've done really, because they bring in new equipment, we probably see that we hope they're going to do a record on a weekly basis between 18,000 and 20,000. Then also what we've seen very nice that Transnet was bringing in, they use their multi-purpose containers that they, or terminals that they help them to take the big load. So we monitor on a weekly and a daily basis now about 9 terminals to make sure how do they work. So it just shows you that Durban is still our biggest container terminal, and it handles a large volume between Pier 1 and Pier 2. But also it's not specifically private sector that was coming into Transnet. I think private sector did help in terms of the capital equipment and how we can make sure that the equipment's been maintained and look well after. But I think I must compliment Transnet with Anna Michelle Phipps and with Solly and then the whole executive team.
Yes.
They were bringing in to look at how can they look at people, how can they incentivize them, how can they monitor them, how can they give visibility in the system. And I think what we also start seeing now from private sector, which is for us quite nice, you see a little bit of competition between Cape Town, the Eastern Cape, and the Durban terminals, which is for me fascinating, because I know in the textbooks they always write about interport and intraport competition and you need to stimulate that. But I think for me it was fascinating to see it over the last 3 months how the ports are competing amongst each other in terms of port productivity. And that is for me a very good sign.
It is a good sign. And maybe let's go there, because I remember reading an article that quoted that the Cape Town port actually saw a 60% increase in the last few months. Durban port is still processing quite a bit. And the number you revealed there was 18,000 TEUs. I'm quite keen, you know, the intra-port competition. Is that just for a badge of honor, or does it also contribute to the economic growth and investment of the port, the province, the region and the city that the port might be located in?
It does, because I think if you look at the Western Cape government, they're very much on the fruit season and they're pushing that a lot now, and they want to make sure that we maintain our status and that Cape Town can give the reliability in the supply system, because specifically when we export, you don't want the overseas market to read that our ports don't have a port productivity, our vessels are sitting long in the port. What does that make? They don't tell us that, but it creates a nervousness in the system. And then they maybe say, maybe we're not such a reliable export partner. I know there's contracts, but then they maybe in their contract decision, they move to some other places. And that's not what we want, because we believe in SA Inc. We've got a brand to sell.
Yeah.
We've got amazing products. And we want to make sure that our port productivity and sustainability, and maybe coupled to that is the reliability, stay in the system, and it gives us a good name. And also, I must say, the Cape Town team under Oscar, and also what we see that was beautiful over the last 3 months, it was the working between TPT, which is a terminal, and the Port Authority to bring the vessels in. And that is really, when we look at it across the port, we can say there's two gentlemen. That's Oscar, which is a terminal manager, and Radesh, which looks after the TNPA. Really? They're working like you can't believe. It's so good communication, collaboration, and also the private sector, of course, is always there.
Yeah.
But I think it's just beautiful to see when people start working together and they understand the different business models.
Fascinating. It is fascinating. And I hope we get to meet Oscar and Rajesh. You know, it's these individuals who I love that you're also mentioning them by name. You know, they're at the coalface, right on the front line, and they get to experience the impact and, of course, show the growth and innovation as leaders at the coalface of it all. What I'm also quite keen to discuss with you, Juanita, is the dynamics of what actually happens and further assistance and controls. And we can't ignore SARS, right? For anyone who's ever brought anything into the country, whether we're buying a T-shirt from an online website or gym equipment and vehicles, we know that there's some kind of form of acknowledgement of taxes and clearance that also needs to be followed through with. Does that also play a part in how quickly we've been able to process the number of tonnages and TEUs through our ports?
Yeah, we look at data, because in the supply chain, you have normally your first is your cargo movement. So you will have your manifest data, because the cargo is put on the vessel, it comes in a container, and there's a rule that 5 days before a vessel comes in, the Transnet will submit that data fields to SARS. So they know what's coming in the country on the manifest or the transport document. Then you, as the importer on record, need to do the clearance in a couple of days. Normally, what we see in the supply chain, they do it prior to the arrival of a vessel at the port. Mm-hmm. Then they will do the customs declaration, and that all happens up in the cloud, because you sit in front of your computer, you do your supplies invoice, your packing list, and you submit it. And SARS have a very good gateway. They process the transactions, I would think, but sometimes less than 6 minutes, 5 minutes. And depending if there's a risk profile, if there's a risk rule that's been triggered, then it will flag, your container will go into an unpack depot and they will unpack it. The only challenge that we see now, and we specifically work with the BMA, Dr. Mike, is that all the government agencies is not on a similar platform in terms of digitalization. They still work with a manual process. And you know it as I do, the moment that you've got a manual process, an electronic process,
yeah,
and it doesn't dovetail, then you start stopping the supply chain. So I think that's something down the line, which we're obviously looking now to see how we can streamline that and make sure that all our other government agencies work on an electronic platform.
Gotcha.
A simple thing, you know, if South African police is stopping a container for various reasons, you want that to be captured on a platform, you want the feedback loop mechanism, and you want to show the transparency to the business owners, that is why I stop your container, and this is repetitive stops. I think that's a long way, or let's say that we need to work with government to bring that transparency. But I think it's an exciting landscape that we're in.
Definitely. To close off with, Juanita, I could speak to you all night. I'm really curious about, you know, so much that happens within the freight and logistics environment. And I do believe it's something we shouldn't take for granted, because, as I mentioned, you know, we buy TVs, we buy home appliances, we buy cars, and we forget that, you know, before they make it to the store and the distribution center and up the truck that came up the N3, it actually comes from a container and was processed through the port and actually had to go through this whole network of logistics. So I guess next time we think about the importance not only of our ports, but an organization like yours as freight forwarders, how do we need, as South Africans, ordinary South Africans, to contextualize the impact it has on our economy, but also our livelihoods?
Very much. I think so. When we analyze the supply chain, you can probably break it down in 24 steps. And the 24 steps can be anything like 12 handover points.
Sure.
So, yeah, it's quite a complex environment. That's why we're actually so glad Minister Barbara Creecy is the Minister of DOT, because we can see the way that she comes back to the business. It's really captured with intellect, understanding, a deep understanding, and to make sure that she doesn't want to distort the network, but she wants to enhance it with excellence. And I think that's for us quite really remarkable.
100%. Juanita, before we let you go, I understand we have a caller on the line who actually wants to ask a question around unclaimed cargo. So I'm hoping that you'll give us the liberty of just making sure that we're able to address the question. If you can't hear it, I will reiterate it. But Ofense, you're calling in from Lynnwood and clearly enjoying this conversation as much as I am. Welcome to Kaya Biz.
Hi there. Yes, no, definitely. So my curious question is about unclaimed cargo. You know, I can imagine there's tons and tons of, you know, things that come into the country and then are never, for whatever reason, claimed by the recipient. So what happens to all of it?
Great question, Ofense. We'll address that question to Juanita. Juanita, I'm hoping that you heard Ofense's question, essentially asking what happens to unclaimed cargo. Yes.
Yeah, I don't think there's so many unclaimed cargo because, as I explained, the manifest is coming and normally the shipping lines don't want that because they make money holding the container and then hand it over to the freight forwarder or the customs broker or the cargo owner. So they would not want to make sure that there's a lot of untamed cargo. Mm. But if it's the case, and it's normally a timeline, that if the cargo has not been cleared for a certain period, it goes then to the state's warehouse. And then it sits in the state's warehouse for a certain period of customs control, and then they will have an auction to do. But sometimes we found in that period that the exporter of the country of origin will sometimes call it back, or they will do a process to say that that cargo needs to return. But according to my knowledge, and it's something that Fancy alert me to now, I'm going to do a little bit before you invite me again, I'm going to do a little bit of research and see how many is abandoned to the state's warehouse. And that effectively means they haven't cleared the cargo. It's not allowed to come into the country.
Ah, so it doesn't even get destroyed. It would have to clear that particular number of days. Juanita, Ofense and I are going to enjoy the next conversation we have with you. So thank you so much for your time this evening. Enjoy your international travels, and we look forward to touching base upon your return.
Thank you. A pleasure. Thank you very much.
Juanita Marie, the CEO of Southern African Association of Freight Forwarders, joining us this evening. As you've heard, really just reflecting on the ecosystem, the business of freight logistics in the country, and of course how it does operate and processes, and the competitiveness of our ports that are looking to target new all-time highs in terms of the TEUs, the equivalent metric essentially of tonnage, and how quickly it is that we're able to process that within the number of containers processed.
Kaya Biz with Gugule Tumfuphi, Monday to Thursday, 6 to 8 p.m. on Kaya 959.
Click kaya959.co.za
to download the Kaya Biz podcast.